explain to me why he can't come back for a 15th anniversary show or why he can't make an appearance at WrestleMania. Don't fuck me around and tell me that you love this when you're just doing this to do something else. He just doesn't give anything back, man. I wish he'd just show up. Just say hi and leave. That's all he's got to do. The eyebrow once and get out of town. The chosen one.
Those were the controversial comments of one John Cena. Welcome to another edition of the Solid Monster Sounds Off podcast here at SCScoops.com. Here for March 2nd. This is episode number 17, and boy, do we have a lot of stuff to cover in this week's podcast. Just a ton of stuff. And the comments you heard at the top there were from John Cena, an interview conducted with the UK Sun actually earlier in January. This interview is somewhat dated. As those of you that have listened to it could probably tell, where Cena talks about the fact that he was still recovering from an injury and wouldn't be at WrestleMania. But boy, those comments he made are still relevant, and we're going to get to that in just a second. As always, first thing I want to mention, for those of you that aren't aware, we do now have a podcast page here at SCScoops.com where all of the most recent podcasts are archived for your listening pleasure. I think we have the last seven up there. So always be aware of that, the link at the top of the page. And for those of you who do log on, usually on Sundays at the tail end of the weekend, to check out the latest podcast, if you don't see it listed on the main page, scroll down a bit. It's probably there. It sometimes gets bumped down, but you do have the podcast page to access all of the shows. So let's get right into it. I'm going to start with the John Cena comments that were made in the Sun interview, and it's somewhat relevant in light of the fact that we found out that The Rock will be appearing, in fact, this year at the WWE's Hall of Fame ceremony in Orlando to induct his father and grandfather. And I'll talk more about the Hall of Fame a little bit later on. But man, I mean, it's you know, tough to really say exactly what John Cena is thinking when he makes comments like that. Now, I couldn't play the entire interview, obviously. It was close to half an hour long. I did listen to it. The comments you heard earlier were the most talked about, the most controversial comments that he made in the course of the interview. He was asked about The Rock. It came up in a topic of conversation about movies. Of course, John Cena himself has starred in a movie before. He'll star in another one that's actually filming as we speak, called 12 Rounds. That movie will be the next WWE Films presentation out next year. But, you know, Cena's comments, were they taken out of context? Were they not? You may have seen posts about that right here at SCScoops.com. In listening to the interview, I can tell you that those comments were, in fact, not taken out of context. Now, look, here's my thoughts on this, and you know, I kind of have a strong opinion on it. John Cena is not a bad guy. In fact, I like John Cena. A lot of people clearly don't, or at least they don't like cheering him at the arenas. But the fact is, he gets a reaction from the crowd. He's the hottest superstar that WWE has. He sells a ton of merchandise. And for all the talk about being the franchise, he really is. He really is the franchise player. You know, what Sting was at one point to WCW as the so-called franchise, what Hogan was, what Austin was, The Rock and others, that's really what Cena is to this company right now. You know, you have the older guys like Undertaker and Triple H, but John Cena is the dominant young star of the company, and he does a great job, and he's definitely very dedicated to his craft. He's come a long way these last couple of years. He's already main evented a bunch of WrestleManias, and I'm sure he'll main event a lot more before it's all said and done. Now, having said that, let's take a look at some of these comments, you know, bit by bit. In talking with The Sun, saying that what he gets kind of peeved about and what he calls his Achilles heel is that he's wanted to do this being wrestling, his entire life. And Cena goes on to say that at one point, Rock loved wrestling and wanted to do this all his life. So explain to me why he, being The Rock, can't come back. You heard the comments earlier. How come The Rock can't come back for the Raw 15th anniversary show? How come he can't come back once a year at WrestleMania? First of all, The Rock is under no obligation to come back at all. You know, The Rock gave WWE, give or take, six good full-time years of competition. I mean, The Rock gave his blood, his sweat, his tears, all that stuff. He gave that to WWE for a full 5 or 6 years before he started branching off into movies. And of course, towards the end of his career, he only wrestled sporadically. He came in for a special program with Hogan, for a special program with Goldberg. He came back in 2004, his last match before his official retirement, I guess you would say, the mixed tag against Evolution at WrestleMania 20 at MSG. So, The Rock gave WWE a lot of good years, and make no mistake, when Stone Cold Steve Austin went down with neck surgery, he of course suffered a neck injury back in 97, it manifested itself later in 99, Austin was taken out of the game, he was out for almost a year. In his absence, two guys stepped up to the plate for the year 2000. Two guys were really the top stars feuding in WWE for a large part of the year 2000. Those two guys were Triple H and The Rock. Now, Triple H did a fine job in his role as top heel. In my opinion, Triple H's best year, in ring at least, was probably 2000, and that was the year he really came into his own as a champion, as a main event player. But for every bad guy, there needs to be a good guy. And that's where The Rock came in. And The Rock had big shoes to fill. He was already a big star at that point. Him and Austin were the top two dogs in WWE. But when Austin went down, Rock had to fill that role. And he did a fine job at doing it. There's a lot of people that would say, for all the talk about the real attitude years, 98 and 99, and how those were the best years in WWE, a lot of people will say BS. 2000 was the best overall year for WWE, just in terms of the product, in terms of the creative. You know, whether I agree with that or not is irrelevant. The fact is, though, The Rock had a very big part of that. He played a very big role in that. And in that respect alone, Rock did more than enough to carry the company on his shoulders at a time when they really needed him. But other than that, he gave them a lot of good years. He brought in a lot of fans. And The Rock will go down at the end of the day as one of the most popular superstars to ever set foot in that company. And that's among guys like Austin and like Hogan. The Rock, at the end of the day, forget tickets gross or t-shirts sold. At the end of the day, in terms of name value, The Rock may end up surpassing even Hogan. I mean, The Rock has already established himself as more of a movie star than Hulk Hogan could ever dream of being. But overall, he may end up surpassing Hogan as a household name. So The Rock did a lot for that company. And the fact is, he has moved on to a new line of work. And he's very good at it. In fact, I actually missed his cameo. He made an appearance at the Oscars last Sunday to present an award. And I know that for him, and he's commented on this, that was a huge thing for him and a tremendous honor. And it's really a good sign, a great sign, of how far The Rock has come in a relatively short period of time. He's a funny guy. He's a talented guy. He's a good guy. And so when I hear somebody like John Cena make comments to the effect of, man, you know, The Rock doesn't give back. You know, don't fuck me and don't do this and don't do that. First of all, you know, if I'm John Cena, I got to learn, first and foremost, to keep my mouth shut. What business of it is it of John Cena's to comment on whether or not The Rock gives back? First of all, why is The Rock expected to give anything back at this point if he doesn't want to? The Rock has given plenty to WWE. He's given plenty to the wrestling industry. In fact, he gave maybe the most important thing of all. He tried to give it a good name. When you think of people in the business, even if they've accomplished a lot in the ring, on camera, there's a lot of very shady characters and shady personalities in the wrestling world. A lot of them with demons and skeletons in their closet. The Rock is one of the few good guys I can think of. I never used to hear stories about that. The Rock's a very talented guy, a very charismatic guy. He never caused problems. He never caused trouble. He came in all glitz and glamour, big smile, and the fans resented him for it. Very similar to what has happened, in fact, with John Cena. The two of them could probably relate to that more than anything else. The fans had a backlash against The Rock when he was initially shoved down the fans' throats, chanted, "Die, Rocky, die, Rocky sucks." But from that, The Rock was able to take all of that, take that anger, take that aggression. That heel turn in 97 was a pivotal point in his career, and he went on to become one of the biggest stars of all time. Now that The Rock has moved on and he's making movies and he's doing other things with himself, he's 35 years old now, he was able to leave the industry in good physical shape without any major injuries, which is a rarity in the wrestling business. He got out. He's making millions of dollars making movies. He'll be able to walk around 10, 15, 20 years from now, not hunched over and crippled, able to play with his kid. Who says The Rock has to ever make an appearance again? Would I love to see The Rock appear on Raw from time to time? Absolutely. Would I love to see him at WrestleMania this year, being that he'll be in town for the event? Absolutely. Is he going to be there? Probably not. If he is, great. If he's not, I certainly will not resent him any more or any less because of it. So this insinuation that The Rock somehow sold out, or that, oh yeah, he's such a good guy, but why doesn't he ever give anything back? He's so selfish, he doesn't really care about wrestling anymore. The Rock has wrestling in his blood. It's part of who he is. And for those of you that didn't see the interview that he conducted in the UK, he's on a UK tour right now promoting the game plan, which just came out over there. I posted a story at SC Scoops just the other day, and I've actually gone back, for those of you that weren't aware, and I actually inserted some YouTube clips of the interview in there for those of you that want to go back and watch it. Even in interviews now, when the subject of wrestling comes up, you know, The Rock talked about the fact that he's moved on, he retired quietly, which is why people still ask him all the time, hey, when are you coming back? He didn't make a big spectacle out of it. He wanted to retire quietly, thank the people that he wanted to thank, and move on with his life. But even now, when wrestling comes up in interviews, he glows about it when he talks about his father, when he talks about his grandfather. And no doubt, inducting the two of them in the Hall of Fame this year, as he will on March 29th, is going to be a huge honor for The Rock and very emotional. The Rock is very much in tune with the wrestling industry and will always be in tune with it. It's in his blood. His father was in it. His grandfather was in it. He grew up around it. He grew up in the locker room around guys like Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan and the Iron Sheik. So this notion that, you know, because The Rock doesn't agree to come on Raw, you know, the same show, mind you, where Vince McMahon still insists upon walking around with his pants around his ankles, asking people to kiss his ass. You know, this notion that The Rock is somehow, he's sold out, or he doesn't like wrestling fans. You know, he spits on the industry. You know, John Cena needs to shut his mouth. He needs to keep his mouth shut when it comes to this subject. He doesn't know The Rock, as best as I can tell. I don't even know that he's ever met him. You know, I'm sure they must have met at some point, shaking hands, but they don't really know each other. And from what I've heard, from what I've read, from what I understand, there are a lot of veterans, both in the company and outside the company, but in the industry, that are very pissed off in their own right about John Cena's comments. I'm not the only one who's pretty steamed about what he had to say, because in a word, it was really disrespectful. And you know, for those of you that did not hear the interview yourselves, and I didn't play those clips at the beginning, I did play the most sensationalistic ones because those were the most controversial comments. John Cena did say good things about The Rock. He said he's a good guy. He doesn't blame him for wanting to do movies. Any person in their right frame of mind would do the same thing. But the comments were not taken out of context. Cena was very clear in saying that in his mind, The Rock doesn't give anything back, and he doesn't understand why. And it'll be interesting to see 10 years from now, since Cena seems to be following the same career path as The Rock, if Cena is still wrestling full-time the way he is now. If he can stay healthy, of course. Or if Cena is making movies and making few, if any, wrestling appearances, would he consider himself a hypocrite? That would be something very interesting to see in the future. I don't have a crystal ball. I have no idea. I can't tell. And who's to say whether John Cena will become as successful an actor as The Rock has become? But these comments were just seemingly out of nowhere. Even though the interview was somewhat dated, it was recorded earlier this year in January. I'm not quite sure why these comments were first posted now, but he made the comments. They're from John Cena. They're legit, and they don't really make a whole lot of sense. Why you would basically bash somebody like The Rock and insinuate that they don't give anything back, they don't give a crap about wrestling because he hasn't agreed to show up on your TV show to come out for 5 minutes because you want him to, is something that just boggles my mind. And John Cena needs to learn a little bit of self-control in that respect. You know, he is a premier spokesperson and representative of the company. They send him out on media interviews, and he does a very good job of it. He's very articulate. Cena is the guy that you want out there. These comments were somewhat uncharacteristic of him to make, and they certainly will not endear him to certain people that already did not like him. Like I said, I like the guy. I don't really have a problem with John Cena, but in this case, I think he put his foot in his mouth and he was wrong. The Rock doesn't owe him or owe the business anything, but to insinuate that he's never given back to the industry or he's obligated to show up whenever WWE comes beckoning is just absolute BS. And I got to say, as much as I would love to see The Rock on TV, I almost hope The Rock doesn't show up now. Let The Rock show up at the Hall of Fame and go home. I don't want to see him at WrestleMania now. I hope he sticks to his guns and does his own thing and has much success. Just to piss off people like John Cena. What dumbass remarks for him to make. And I'll throw the poll question for this week out there. I want to hear from you guys. What do you think about Cena's comments? Were you offended by them? Do you agree with him? Now, remember now, this is not the same as do you want to see The Rock on TV? I'm sure a lot of you want to see The Rock on TV. Maybe some of you don't. The comments that Cena made, though, were that The Rock is somehow wrong or being disrespectful to the industry for not appearing anymore, that he's not, quote-unquote, giving back. Do you agree with that? I'd be curious to get your thoughts. TheSolomonster@gmail.com is the email address. Let me know what you think. Moving on to one of the other big stories of the week, and again, there's a lot of news to get to this week, but that's what we're doing here. Episode 17, we're making sense of the news so you don't have to. The other big story, Vince McMahon. Ducking Congress? That's the question. Well, Congress holds yet another congressional hearing this past week. Another pointless, rambling hearing. You know, even I'm getting a little tired of it, quite frankly. Congress certainly had the power and had the ability late last year, to really do something and really hold meaningful hearings as they related to professional wrestling. Of course, they ended up not doing that. And part of that was because the whole wrestling issue was overshadowed by the Mitchell Report that was commissioned by Baseball Commissioner Bud Selig. And when the Mitchell Report came out and all of the subsequent news about Roger Clemens, that became the focal point, and wrestling kind of fell between the cracks, as it always seems to do. Now, in this case, what happened was last Wednesday, the Bobby Rush Commerce, Trade, and Consumer Protection Subcommittee held hearings on steroids in sports. Bud Selig, Roger Goodell, who was the commissioner of the NFL, David Stern, who was the commissioner of the NBA, and Gary Bettman of the NHL, among others, did testify. They were summoned, they did show up, and it was kind of surreal to see all the commissioners of the major sports leagues sitting together at one table, but the one missing face was Vince McMahon. Now, for this hearing, Rush was intending upon introducing legislation following the hearings. The belief is that he will be pushing for mandatory independent steroid testing with full reports of results going public and mandatory 2-year suspensions for first offenders. Bud Selig of MLB argued against the 2-year suspensions in baseball. And, you know, for those of you who are baseball fans, I think we can all agree that Bud Selig and the league certainly turned a blind eye to the steroids issue. This has been going on for a number of years now, well over a decade. But baseball has definitely toughened their own steroid policies. I personally am an advocate of doing it the way that the committee wants to. And, I mean, you know, when you get the government involved, you're kind of inviting all sorts of problems. But I think it would just be a lot easier at this point if there were, you know, mandatory, normalized guidelines that guided all of the sports. Instead of baseball having their own set of rules and football having its own set of rules, let's just have one set of rules. They want to adopt the U.S. anti-doping set of rules, which seem to work very well, but they're very strict. And it does present problems. You know, for example, what happens if a baseball player is busted and they claim that they were wronged or they were taking a product that maybe had an ingredient in it that set off a positive test? All of a sudden, that baseball player is not allowed to make a living for himself for 2 years. You know, that's kind of strict, and I think those are the things that need to be negotiated and need to be talked about. Now, Representative Terry of Nebraska, I don't know his first name, I just know his last name, brought up Vince McMahon's absence and said that Vince was basically, quote-unquote, flipping his finger at the committee for not showing up and didn't even deserve to be on the panel. Now, Bobby Rush had mentioned that he was upset that out of all the people invited, only George Mitchell, who had a pretty good excuse, he was being treated for cancer, and McMahon did not show up. He did say the committee intends to continue investigating pro wrestling, mentioning Chris Benoit specifically, even though he pronounced his name Benoit, which tells you all you need to know about how familiar he is with the industry. He also suggested that McMahon make himself available in future meetings because they are not done dealing with pro wrestling on this issue. Now, later on, Vince McMahon shot back. He responded by saying that any suggestion that he or WWE have been uncooperative or flipped his finger, so to speak, at the committee was both inaccurate and unfair. He did say that the company has provided 3,000 pages of documents, and they have fully cooperated with both committees. He did not show up, according to McMahon's story, his premier lawyer, as he has been for many years now, Jerry McDevitt, was held up with some other trial work in Pennsylvania, and that he had actually declined the invite 30 days ago and had not heard anything from the committee until they went public bashing McMahon. There was also a story in Newsday that came out, New York Newsday, this past week, very interesting, that mentioned that McMahon, along with Linda and Stephanie, had met with members of the Committee on Oversight and Government Reform in September of last year. So now we learn of the secret meeting that took place with the McMahons and Congress. And so it's hard to argue in this case against Vince McMahon. You can certainly say a lot of things about Vince and the way that he's conducted himself, and certainly there is a huge problem and has been for a long time with performance-enhancing drugs in professional wrestling. But to insinuate that Vince has not been completely cooperative, seems a little shallow on the part of Congress. You know, he did meet, he did have this, secret meeting with Congress last year. Seems to have a legitimate excuse as far as why he didn't show up. I agree with one of the other representatives that spoke up and said that they found that excuse somewhat hollow. You know, McMahon does have other lawyers, we're sure, but I can tell you that McDevitt is McMahon's main man. I mean, he is his main lawyer, has been for a number of years, was helping McMahon even back during his steroid trial in 1994 and helped get McMahon acquitted of those charges. And it would stand to reason that Vince would want his primary attorney there with him. He has said, though, he is more than willing to meet with Congress. He intends to do so in the future. And so all of a sudden, what seemed yesterday or last week or last month to be like a dead issue, what seemed as though Congress was going to once again ignore pro wrestling and it would fall between the cracks and nothing would happen, it seems like the issue has once again been reignited and we may get something out of this. Something big may yet come from Congress interfering and getting involved here. And it'll be very interesting to see if Vince McMahon does in fact end up appearing in a public hearing, that, especially if it airs on C-SPAN, before Congress, because that could be very, very entertaining. Vince has, he's very bold, he's very brash, he has a lot of bravado. He's made comments before about, yeah, he'll appear before Congress wearing a clown nose. I don't think he will. I certainly hope he doesn't. But it'll be interesting. I think now things may actually start to get done. And let me just put it this way. If Congress does end up pushing legislation forward to standardize steroid testing amongst all the major sports, and if they lump pro wrestling in there, that is going to have some very serious repercussions for the industry, both good and bad. So it'll be very interesting to follow that story. There's one other very interesting nugget of information here that I first read about this past week and was not aware of, and this also is potentially explosive. And that is that apparently members of Congress have reached out to at least two former WWE wrestlers shortly after they were each released by the company. Chris Masters, who was released a short time ago from the company, and Bobby Lashley, who has obtained his release from the company, have both told friends that they were contacted and asked about the WWE drug testing policy. In Masters' case, the word going around is that he was asked whether or not it was true that his physical appearance was mocked on WWE television after he returned from a suspension last year. The question was asked regarding an on-air segment that occurred, and I remember it vividly, and I'm sure many of you do as well. It was a segment where Triple H mocked Masters for losing a significant amount of weight in a short period of time. Indeed, the jokes about Masters' physique were apparently not limited to on-camera segments. Backstage, observers say that Triple H was mercilessly mocking Masters about his shrinking physique and even referred to him as the incredible shrinking man. I have to point out here, my own personal memory, there was another incident that I recall. Randy Orton had underwent shoulder surgery back in 2005. It was, I believe, right after WrestleMania. He lost to The Undertaker. He was hurt, finally went in for surgery, and he had come back on the air a couple of months later, and he was very thin. He was noticeably thinner and slimmer than he had been previously on TV. And he was in the ring with Vince McMahon, and I remember McMahon making a comment to the effect of Orton had a neck like a stack of dimes. And this is while the guy just came off of surgery, and McMahon is basically in the ring mocking the fact that he's smaller. And even then, I remember watching that, and I could not believe that he would actually make those. I mean, here's the owner of the company making comments like that in public on the air. It was just baffling to me at the time, and now we start to see that all of these comments may come back to haunt the company. It may come back to bite them on the rear end. So let's see what happens. You know, it's impossible to tell. There's been a lot of false starts before with Congress. Yeah, they're going to do something and then nothing happens. But again, I said it before and I'll say it again. If there's one positive thing that comes out of this Chris Benoit story, and it's, you know, it's hard to argue that there's anything positive about what happened with Benoit last year. That will go down as the biggest story in the history of wrestling, and for all the wrong reasons. But if there's one positive element that could come out of this, it will have to do with what we're seeing here, with Congress intervening and possibly inducing legislation that may finally rid the industry of all of these evils that have been infecting it for all these years. You know, we don't have to see guys roided up to the gills. Vince McMahon has had this infatuation for years with big muscled guys. I don't know about you guys. I don't really care whether the guy is ripped and has big muscles. I mean, some of the most entertaining in-ring performers have been smaller guys. Guys like Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho had to fight and scratch and claw their way to the top to become top stars. You know, they became top stars in spite of the system in place, not because of it. So let's just take a step back here and see what happens. And certainly any breaking news as it relates to this huge story, we'll have it for you here and talk about it in future podcasts. Rey Mysterio underwent surgery on his torn biceps muscle last Wednesday in San Diego, and apparently is going to be out for 6 to 9 months. His injury was pretty bad. He was actually one of the worst tears that his doctor, Dr. David Chow, had ever seen in his life. And clearly Mysterio worsened the injury by wrestling in two matches after he was injured, including that match against, kind of drawing a blank here, the last match he had on SmackDown. I believe it was with Edge. But in any event, all of that action just made the injury worse. He should be out 6 to 9 months. Mysterio is saying he intends to be back in 6 weeks. We'll see what happens. You know, people said that John Cena was going to be out for up to a year, and he came back in 4 months. I still cannot understand how he came back so quickly. But again, these guys, some of these guys heal quicker than others. You know, these are athletes, you know, and when they're hurt and they want to come back, they work extra hard, and you just hope that they're not, you know, they're not doing the wrong thing. Let's just put it that way. But in any event, some distressing news came out about Mysterio's doctor. Now, instead of having the surgery performed by Dr. James Andrews, who was the renowned orthopedist in Alabama, who basically does all of these types of surgeries for every WWE wrestler and a lot of different athletes, especially NFL players. I mean, Dr. Andrews is the standard. He is the guy to go to when you have a major injury like this. For example, I believe he also performed the pectoral surgery on John Cena last year. Mysterio decided to forego Dr. Andrews and go with Dr. Chow in San Diego for a procedure that Dr. Chow claimed would get Mysterio back in action a lot quicker. And if this sounds somewhat similar, it should, because you may remember that Kurt Angle went in for neck surgery back in 2003 after WrestleMania that year, after he lost the title to Brock Lesnar. Instead of going for the traditional spinal fusion surgery with Dr. Youngblood in Texas, who was the doctor that performed Steve Austin's neck surgery and neck surgeries for guys like Rhino and Lita and Chris Benoit and Hardcore Holly, Kurt Angle decided to go with another doctor, Dr. Joe, in Pittsburgh, in his hometown, for a procedure that, instead of keeping Angle out of action for 12 months, the doctor said that he would have Angle back in the ring in 3 months, which he did. Of course, what you don't know is that Kurt Angle took one chair shot just a few months after he returned that year. One chair shot is all it took to undo everything that was done with that surgery. So, again, you kind of have to, you know, roll your eyes and wonder what these guys are thinking when they opt for these procedures that instead of keeping them out of action for months, we'll keep them out of action for weeks. You know, you have to look long term at things like this, and you just hope that guys like Angle and Mysterio know what they're doing, and you just hope that they're not putting their career or their lives in jeopardy when they make these kinds of decisions. What's distressing about it is the fact that we've now learned that this doctor, Dr. Chow, has been sued 18 times in San Diego Superior Court, including 4 times by San Diego Chargers players for medical malpractice, negligence, and fraud, among other charges. 5 of those lawsuits have been settled with undisclosed payouts to the plaintiffs. 8 others have been dropped for various unknown reasons. Not the best thing in the world when you find out that your doctor has been sued 18 times for medical malpractice, including by some high-profile NFL players. Again, I hope that Mysterio heals. I hope when he heals that he's back at 100% and that he can wrestle and do his thing, but I can't help but be a little leery about what's happened here. I know Mysterio is very, very upset. You know, this will be his 2nd consecutive WrestleMania out of action due to injury. Of course, last year he was still recovering from reconstructive knee surgery. And Mysterio will not be able to compete this year. He has promised, though, that he will be at the pay-per-view in the corner of Floyd Mayweather, who, of course, it is now official, will be facing the Big Show at WrestleMania on March 30th. Now, we don't yet know what kind of match it will be. I'm inclined to believe it'll either be a straight wrestling match or possibly a boxing match. We'll learn more on Raw this Monday night, I would imagine. Mayweather and his people were making the rounds this past week, claiming that they're getting a $20 million payoff for this match at WrestleMania. A lot of people are debating that number. That number just sounds way too high to be accurate. You know, for all I know, it may well be real. I am in the camp with a lot of other people that don't think that number is real. It's just Mayweather grandstanding. It might have been even WWE telling Mayweather to go out and tell people, yeah, I'm making $20 million. And if that was the goal here, it's worked, because the angle really wasn't picking up a lot of publicity before that. But since then, the Associated Press and a lot of other major media outlets have ran with the story about Mayweather making $20 million this year. This pay-per-view would have to really make a lot of money, a lot more money than it normally does, for them to really turn a profit on that kind of investment. Even when they went to Mike Tyson back in 98 and brought him in for the big angle with Shawn Michaels and Steve Austin, which paid huge dividends for the company long term. I mean, that was probably the greatest investment that Vince McMahon ever made. I believe they only paid Tyson about $3 million. And although Mayweather at this point in his career is a better in-ring fighter than Tyson was at that point in time, Tyson was past his prime at that point. At that time, there was no bigger pay-per-view draw than Mike Tyson. And if they paid $3 million for Tyson back then, and they're paying $20 million for Mayweather here in 2008, something about that doesn't make a lot of sense. But you know what? To you and to me, how much money WWE wants to pay is really irrelevant. I really don't give a shit about it, quite frankly. I'm sure you don't either. I'm more curious to see how this angle pans out. It's very exciting. Certainly there was the big celebrity angle last year at WrestleMania involving Donald Trump. This is far different. This is a celebrity, an athlete being brought into the company for an actual in-ring match. Big Show has been great in his role so far. I'm more interested to see long-term who's going to end up as the babyface and who's going to end up as the heel in this feud. So it'll be interesting to follow in the weeks ahead. SmackDown has found a new home, and it will, in fact, appear on My Network TV beginning this fall. I've mentioned before, the final episode of SmackDown on the CW network is scheduled to air, I believe, on September 12th of this year. So the week after that would be the show's premiere on My Network TV. Still some question about when the show will air. I think the days of SmackDown on Friday nights are probably coming to an end. It would be very, very surprising to me to see SmackDown still airing on Friday nights this fall. Friday nights is not a good TV viewership night. SmackDown more than held its own when it got bumped over to Friday nights. It actually performed a hell of a lot better than anybody thought it would. But moving over to My Network, you know, this network needs all the help it can get. Believe me, they are elated to have WWE programming. If WWE wanted to put SmackDown on Sunday night, it would agree, and it would do whatever WWE wanted. So in this case, I think WWE has the leverage. If they want to go on Fridays, they'll go on Fridays. If they want to go on Thursdays again, they can go on Thursdays. But this creates some interesting possibilities here. If SmackDown were to be moved back to Thursday night, it would be head-to-head up against 1 hour of Impact on Spike TV. And already people are talking about, ooh, a Thursday night wrestling war. Not exactly, but, you know, I guess I could see, you know, I could see why people would be excited about that. That would actually be a horrible decision, in my opinion. A lot of people that watch Impact watch SmackDown. There's a lot of crossover audience between the two shows. I think what you're doing, if you put SmackDown up against any part of Impact, is you're essentially splitting the wrestling audience. You're not going to boost your viewership any higher. You're not going to necessarily bring in any new wrestling fans, at least not right away. You're only going to split the audience. Less people are going to watch Impact, or less people are going to watch SmackDown. I think if there was ever a time for SmackDown to go live on Tuesdays, this is it. Now, what that would mean, of course, is that ECW would have to be absorbed into the SmackDown brand. You're not going to have two WWE shows competing against one another going head-to-head on Tuesday nights. Of course, if you had SmackDown at 8 o'clock and had it go off the air at 10, then ECW starts. But you're taping ECW the same night you tape SmackDown, so that wouldn't work. It would be a logistical nightmare. I am a huge proponent of just folding up ECW entirely, fold it up into the SmackDown brand. If you're insistent upon keeping the brand split at all, at least merge the ECW and SmackDown rosters and the shows together. Move SmackDown to Tuesday nights and have the show live. That's what I would do personally. I don't see them doing that, but it's an option that if they wanted to, the network would be more than happy to have live programming on their channel. Now, my network is not available in every U.S. home, so for those of you that aren't sure if you're going to be able to watch the show, you can log on to WWE.com. I believe they have a list or a search function. You can find out where my network airs in your area, if it airs at all. The network does have a lot of exposure. It's available in up to, I believe, 105 million homes. So it's somewhat misleading in that respect. There's more eyeballs that are, you know, able to view my network than even CW. But my network is not a traditional network in the same way that CW or Fox or NBC or CBS is. Essentially, it's a collection of affiliates that choose to pick up the station. So whether or not you will be able to watch SmackDown this fall depends largely on whether or not your local affiliate carries my network programming, so you might want to check that out now if you are a SmackDown fan. Hall of Fame news, and we have some potential spoilers here, so you might want to skip this part if you don't want to know. We found out on Raw this past Monday night that High Chief Peter Maivia and Rocky Johnson, the grandfather and father, respectively, of The Rock, will be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame in Orlando on March 29th, which, by the way, is now sold out. The Rock himself will appear at the Hall of Fame to induct his family members. That should be very special. And now the news comes out, all but confirmed, by WWE themselves, that Jake the Snake Roberts is likely to be inducted into the Hall of Fame this year. The news was first broken by ProWrestling.net and Jason Powell, who reported that Roberts, who is currently in a rehabilitation facility for some kind of addiction. I'm going to assume it's probably alcohol abuse. I know that Jake has had issues with alcohol in the past. He will likely be released either temporarily or released early from that treatment program to attend the ceremony, and that someone will be assigned to keep an eye on him, whatever that means. There were rumblings that, of all people, Scott Hall, who is in the same treatment facility in Georgia with Jake, might attend the Hall of Fame ceremony with Roberts. Man, what a combo that is. Can you imagine that? That must be fun, to be on a plane ride with Jake Roberts and Scott Hall. I'd pay for that flight ticket. Anyway, you might remember that Vince McMahon in WWE graciously made the offer to any current or former performer that has ever worked for the company that they would pay for their treatment for alcohol or drug abuse or any problem in that respect that they wanted to seek treatment for but maybe didn't have the money to do so. WWE made the offer to anybody that they would help foot the bill for it. And since that time, several people have taken them up on their offer, including Jake Roberts, who is almost done. He's been with the program now for several weeks, and that's why I said I'm not sure exactly when he's officially due to be released. He may actually be released right at the time that the Hall of Fame is set to take place. If not, he'd only have maybe a week or so left in the program anyway. I believe it's a 9-week program. But Jake Roberts, I believe, was one of the first people, if not the first person, to take WWE up on their offer. Other people have included Scott Hall, Ron Simmons, which is why you have not seen him on Raw recently. He also is in treatment currently. And I believe Sean Waltman, the former X-Pac, is also in a treatment facility with the bill being taken care of by WWE. Reportedly, Waltman had attempted to hang himself. He had attempted suicide several weeks ago. He's been working for the AAA promotion down in Mexico with his girlfriend, Alicia Webb, who used to be the lovely Ryan Shamrock on WWE programming, the quote-unquote sister of Ken Shamrock. She had walked into their apartment and found him hanging, and thank God she found him because it wasn't looking good there. And he is currently in treatment. Now, Waltman has denied that that's what happened. He claimed, you know, there was another reason why she walked in and found him like that. But, you know, again, who you choose to believe is entirely up to you. The bigger issue here is that thank God he's getting treatment for whatever issues he might be having. It was actually Kevin Nash who reached out to Triple H and said, you know, dude, you gotta get him in there. You gotta get him help, basically. So, Click members sticking up for themselves, and thankfully Waltman is getting the treatment that he deserves. But Jake the Snake likely going into the Hall of Fame in 2008. I think it's great news that Jake is going into the Hall of Fame. I've been an advocate for him to go in for a long time now. A little dubious that they would put Jake in and not people like Ted DiBiase, for example. Ricky Steamboat, I feel, is another prime candidate for the Hall of Fame. But unfortunately, I haven't heard a peep about Steamboat's name coming up in any discussions. While Jake is likely to go in, some other names that have been mentioned include the voice of wrestling, Gordon Solie, who was a mentor for Jim Ross as he came up in the business, and the Briscoe brothers, Jack and Jerry, also likely to go into the Hall of Fame this year. Again, these names are not confirmed until we actually see them announced on WWE television, but these are the names on the most likely list, and Jake is at the top of that list. Perhaps will be announced as early as this Monday night on Raw, but if Jake is going in this year, look, for all the problems and all the demons and everything that's happened with Jake the Snake in the past, and he has had a very sordid history, and he has had issues with drugs and with women and with booze, you know what? Enough people have gone into the Hall of Fame that have questionable histories where I'm willing to overlook that. And if you look solely at Jake's in-ring work and the psychology, and that's really what he's known for, perhaps the greatest mind in the history of the industry. There have been very few performers similar to Jake Roberts, similar to Jake Roberts in that he could cut a promo and come off like a stone-cold killer. In the ring, his psychology, second to none. As an in-ring performer, he was fine. He never was the best. He wasn't an in-ring tactician like somebody like a Shawn Michaels or a Bret Hart or a Ric Flair. But as an overall performer, Jake Roberts was about as good as it gets for a lot of people growing up, and I certainly would love to see him in the Hall of Fame. And if he goes in this year, that's a thumbs up effort in my book right there. He's got my support, so it'll be interesting. A new name will likely be announced on Raw this Monday night. Will it be Jake's name? I don't know, but we will have to wait and find out. Got some MMA news for those of you that are interested in mixed martial arts, and actually some news we just found out about last night concerning former WWE champion Brock Lesnar, who, of course, for those of you who don't know, made his UFC debut at UFC 81 early last month. Lesnar lost in his first match to former UFC champion Frank Mir, but had a very, very impressive showing, and were it not for a controversial call by the referee, may well have won that match. But Lesnar is on his way back for a second fight. He will fight again, and he will fight in his hometown of Minneapolis, Minnesota, at UFC 87 on August 9th. His opponent will be the latest inductee into the UFC Hall of Fame, Mark Coleman, former UFC heavyweight champion and Pride Grand Prix winner, who was just inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame at their pay-per-view show last night. Coleman, who I don't believe has had a fight since late 2006, will be coming back, and he will be facing Brock Lesnar in August in Lesnar's home state of Minnesota. I am not as familiar with Coleman's background to know whether or not this is good for Brock or bad for Brock, but the fact is, you know, a lot of people are going to look at this and say, well, here we go again, Lesnar being fed an old, washed-up former champion trying to make a comeback, and, you know, he lost to Frank Mir. Who's to say he won't lose to Mark Coleman? I think this is a fight that probably favors Brock. I think we're at a point now, you know, UFC said, look, if Brock loses his first fight, no big deal. As long as he comes out of the gate like the beast that he is, if he has a good showing, People are going to like him. People are going to look at him as a legitimate threat no matter what. If he wins, all the better. Lesnar didn't win, but man, was he impressive last month. But I think now we're at a point where if Lesnar comes into this thing and gets knocked out or he loses, especially if it's a short fight, if he loses to Mark Coleman in August, the bloom may start to come off that rose a little bit. Lesnar really needs to win a fight. So it'll be interesting to see what happens at UFC 87 when he locks horns with Hall of Famer Mark Coleman. Now, some other huge MMA news this week I'll cover very briefly here. For those of you that did not hear, MMA is coming to network television, and this is a really big deal. Elite XC, who is the number two, I guess by default, number two MMA promotion in the country, kind of like TNA would be considered the number two promotion by default when you compare it to WWE. Elite XC has signed a contract with CBS for a series of four live network specials on Saturday nights that will air this year, the first of which I believe will air in late April. And their star attraction, this guy Kimbo Slice, I saw his fight on Showtime a few weeks ago against Tank Abbott. Man, is this guy impressive. Not the kind of guy you want to meet in a dark alley. Kimbo Slice will likely headline that first Elite XC on CBS card, and this is a really big deal for the mixed martial arts world. You know, UFC, that was UFC's deal. They have been in negotiations with CBS for months now, and seemingly those negotiations broke down because Dana White, the president of UFC, didn't want to allow CBS to use their own announcers. You know, UFC wanted to maintain creative control over the show. The deal fell apart. All of a sudden, their main competition swoops in and steals their network TV deal. Now, UFC will be just fine. They're doing well. But this could potentially open the door for this company to become legitimate competition to UFC, a legit number two threat. So this is a really big deal. UFC had their own big announcement this week. But, you know, once Elite XC made their announcement, UFC's announcement didn't quite have the luster, I think, that they were hoping it would. They had entered into a major agreement with Budweiser for Bud to be their primary sponsor, I believe, starting at their pay-per-view in late May, May 24th. I don't know what UFC number that is, but that's when the agreement will kick in. I believe it's a four-year agreement. That is a huge deal for UFC because, you know, to have a blue-chip sponsor like Budweiser, much like Harley-Davidson, which is UFC's other big sponsor, it brings credibility to the sport, and it also, you know, brings in a lot of money. So UFC's announcement somewhat overshadowed, I guess you would say, by their competition this week, but some big MMA news this week. So those of you that are into that, definitely a newsworthy week in that respect. And man, talk about newsworthy. This new section, and for those of you that haven't seen it, at WWE.com has people buzzing all over the place. People haven't shut up about it, and even I'm amazed by it. Logged on to the website on Friday to find that the new industry news section that WWE.com has, and to see WWE hyping a TNA pay-per-view on their own website. Now, you know, my first impressions of this were that, you know, heads are going to roll when Vince McMahon or Stephanie McMahon finds out about this. Occasionally, the website will try things out on their own, and it won't last long. It'll disappear. And that's kind of when you know that, you know, somebody from above put the kibosh on it and kind of put an end to it. The section is still up on the website. It hasn't been updated this weekend because they normally don't update that stuff on the weekend. But by Monday, it'll be interesting to see if it's still there and if it is, if it's updated. Right now, if you log on to their website, you'll see some news up there about TNA. There's some news about ROH pay-per-view dates, Chikara Wrestling. Really, what the story behind this is that they're looking for more unique website visitors. You know, their traffic has taken a bit of a dip, and what WWE is interested in is merely bringing more people into the website. And if they feel that this is one way to bring more people to their site, that's exactly what they'll do. What's interesting is that they're lifting this news directly from news websites like SEScoops.com. They're just taking news from those sites, even if it's just a couple of sentences. They're giving credit to the respective website and just slapping it on their own website, which seems to go against everything they believe in because, you know, they have a disdain for other internet wrestling sites and newsletters and things of that nature. And, you know, here they are giving some of those very same people credit and putting news about other promotions on their website. Not that WWE should necessarily feel threatened by ROH or Chikara, but you know, it was certainly surreal to see TNA pay-per-view dates and a pay-per-view pre-sale password being listed on WWE.com. By all accounts, people backstage in TNA have no problem with this whatsoever. They love it. They have no problem with the their main competition plugging their pay-per-view on their own website. So we'll see how long this section stays up for and if this you know, turns around their traffic. But, man, that was a surreal moment logging onto that website this week and seeing that on there. All right, 50 minutes in, and we're first getting to your feedback now. Oh, boy. As always, send in feedback to thesolomonster@gmail.com, thesolomonster@gmail.com, with any questions or comments. Let's get to the first one. We have a letter from Tyler who wants to know what I think of the WWE raising their WrestleMania pay-per-view prices $5, and if they do show the event in HD, which they will. Apparently the price is going to be about $65, which Tyler feels is going overboard, and I agree. Now, I do not have HD capability, so I will be watching WrestleMania in standard definition this year with some family, but apparently the prices are going up even for the standard feed from $50 to $54.95, and the HD feed will be about $10 more than that. Look, you know, WWE is free to do what they want to. They know that if of all the events they put on, WrestleMania is the one that people are either going to watch it or they're not. So in a case like myself, for example, and probably many of you listening, I'm going to watch WrestleMania no matter what because it is WrestleMania. Every wrestling fan watches WrestleMania. Do I like the fact that they're constantly raising prices? Of course not. I don't know anybody that does like it, but they're certainly free to do whatever they want to. Tyler also wants to know my thoughts on Stone Cold Sharkboy in TNA. You know, I did catch Sharkboy for the first time with the Stone Cold gimmick. This past week, I was watching a couple of YouTube videos. You know, I think it's funny, and I think he pulls off, you know, the voice and the impersonation very well. I question how long this is going to last. I just look at that as more than a short-term gimmick. I think, you know, a couple more weeks, and people are going to probably get a little tired of Stone Cold Sharkboy. Now, on the other hand, I've talked about this before. You know, Jay Lethal playing the role of Macho Man, you know, Black Machismo, I still get a kick out of that, you know. And again, it was a real thrill for me to meet Jay Lethal, you know, and you know, backstage at the Webster Hall TNA event in New York City the week before last. So, you know, Black Machismo is great. And even Curry Man, the Curry Man gimmick being played by Christopher Daniels, I think is a riot. Shark Boy is the one that I wonder how much more longevity that gimmick has. But you know what? They're coming out with Stone Cold Shark Boy merchandise. If the guy can make some money off it, if the guy has success, lots of luck. Even Steve Austin, in interviews, has been asked about that. And Austin doesn't have a problem with it. Like Stone Cold himself said, if the guy can get himself over with it and has some success, lots of luck. I just wonder how much longer that he can sustain that type of gimmick without it getting old. Longtime listener Lee, curious to know if Mr. Kennedy really has any chance of walking away from Money in the Bank victorious this year, and possibly winning the WWE Championship. Of course, you know, Kennedy has a 1-in-8 shot of winning the match. I think there's 8 participants this year. It's pretty much anybody's ballgame. Kennedy won the Money in the Bank match last year and would likely, now I believe the plan, and it was announced, you know, Kennedy said he was going to hold on to the title shot and cash it in this year at WrestleMania. Had Kennedy not suffered that biceps injury, which turned out not to be as serious as they thought it was, he likely would be facing The Undertaker for the championship this year at WrestleMania. Of course, Kennedy got hurt, lost the match to Edge. Edge took the shot, cashed it in, and won. Now, could Kennedy win again? Absolutely. Kennedy is, again, one of the fast rising stars in the company, and it would not shock me to see him win that match. But, you know, you cannot deny the fact that the odds-on favorite right now for Money in the Bank is Jeff Hardy. I don't see that changing, but you know, Kennedy certainly has, I think, other than Jeff Hardy, the best shot of walking away from that match victorious. Got another email from our good friend Matt in New Zealand, who actually is throwing down the gauntlet. He has a challenge for me. Wants to know if I could pronounce the name of the city that he is from, which I can tell you, looking at the spelling of it, probably is not the way that it's going to be pronounced, but I'm going to give it a shot. Is it Whangarei? Pretty sure I got that right. You'll let me know. Anyway, Matt wants to know, why is it that when WWE comes to New Zealand, which they have the last 2 years, and they are again coming up this year, why is it always the SmackDown ECW brand? What are the chances of seeing a Raw event in New Zealand in the next few years? I would say there's certainly a chance. I actually don't know the answer to that question. The only thing I can assume is that perhaps SmackDown and ECW have better clearances in New Zealand. I mean, I assume that Raw does air in the country, but perhaps it's on more of a delay than SmackDown. I mean, it's not the greatest explanation in the world. I'm really a little bit puzzled by that myself, so I don't necessarily have a straight answer for you. I would have to assume, though, if you have not seen any Raw action in the last few years, that you would probably, you know, you'd have to see it at some point or another. I know they do some pretty good business in New Zealand, but I have no idea when you may see a Raw event down there. Another question also that Matt has is wanting to know what the chances are of having a TNA show in New Zealand or even Australia in the near future. Not likely. If TNA can stay healthy long term and continue to build their company, I think in the next couple of years, maybe you might see a TNA show there. I think, you know, Australia more likely than New Zealand. The reason that you won't see a TNA show there now is because they're just not equipped to do that. I don't really know that TNA does a whole lot of international touring, if they do any at all. Certainly, if they do any, it would likely be over in the UK and in Europe. I just don't think they have the finances or the wherewithal to do touring to that great extent in New Zealand, in Australia. I just don't think they're equipped to do that yet, so I don't really think the chances are that great. And speaking of Australia, the next letter comes from another fan of the podcast, Thomas, who is actually from the land down under. He has a little bit of a problem now with this Bunny Mania match that has been signed for WrestleMania. And he wants to know, why is it that WWE simply cannot promote the Playboy issue with a 30-second vignette? You know, we could have had a great fatal four-way match for the women's championship involving, in his view, Beth Phoenix, Mickie James, the recently returned Candice Michelle, and Melina. And instead, we're being treated to a Bunny Mania tag team match and seemingly no women's title defense. And unfortunately, you know, people like Mickie James, who is probably one of the most, if not the most, over female performer in the company, isn't even slated to be on the WrestleMania card, which sucks for her because that means she doesn't get a WrestleMania payday. And certainly, I would think that performers like Mickie James and Victoria are deserving of getting a piece of that pie. Well, the reason they do it, quite simply, it's a gimmick match. And it's a gimmick that, in their view, is helpful in terms of promoting the Playboy issue coming out with Maria. Now, yeah, it is somewhat ridiculous. People are going to buy that Playboy issue no matter what. And I'm sure it's going to be an extremely hot-selling issue because Maria is very over and she is very, very attractive. In fact, for those of you that aren't aware, if you are in the New York City area, Maria will be in New York City, in Times Square, this Thursday, I believe at noon, I believe at the Virgin Megastore, signing copies of her Playboy. For those of you, you know, pervs like me out there who would love to make it, I cannot make it. But if you do, certainly send in a report and let us know how that goes. As far as Bunny Mania, again, I kind of groaned when I heard the match was announced, and it's strictly a gimmick to help sell more Playboys. That's really all it is. As far as trying to figure out what goes through their heads when they make these kinds of things, we could be here for weeks. There's no point in trying to figure out what's going through their heads. Got a letter from longtime listener Orlando, who actually had some questions concerning SmackDown and ECW and My Network TV. I think I answered that a little bit earlier on. If not, I'm sure you'll write in to let me know, but I just wanted to give Orlando a shout-out. James wants to know, is there an in-ring future for the wrestler who portrayed Muhammad Hassan, or have we seen the last of him? Most likely you have seen the last of him. The performer, his name is Mark Copani, came up in the developmental system for quite some time. He has moved on to, I believe, I think he moved out to California in the hopes of trying to build a movie career for himself. I'm not sure he's been that successful. But again, you know, best of luck to the guy if that's what he wants to do. I think the likelihood of seeing him back in wrestling is not great, but the likelihood of seeing him back in WWE is probably non-existent. Letter comes into us from another first-time emailer, long-time listener, who thinks it's somewhat odd that everyone is just assuming that Ric Flair is going to lose at WrestleMania, just because you know, what we heard, you know, on certain websites or newsletters or what the conventional wisdom might be does not necessarily mean that it's true. I mean, that's certainly true. You can say that for pretty much any piece of wrestling news or rumor that you hear about. His philosophy is, you know, take a look at who he's facing in Shawn Michaels. You know, Michaels certainly does not get hurt if he loses to Ric Flair at WrestleMania because of who he is. He's Shawn Michaels. He's a future Hall of Famer himself. Mr. WrestleMania, in fact, is his moniker. And even though Shawn has been known to have an ego, he likely does not have a problem losing to a friend and a mentor. And Ric Flair is a mentor of his. You know, he emulated Ric Flair, and Ric Flair was a big part of why Michaels got into the business in the first place. He's talked about that before. I believe he's talked about that on his DVD. Anyway, his argument here is that Flair can have other exciting and interesting programs with people like Kennedy, Randy Orton. The combinations certainly are endless. You know, what gives as far as that goes? Well, first of all, yeah, you know, it's not a given that Ric Flair will lose at WrestleMania, but I think it's 99% set in stone that he will. And here's the reason why. You know, for all we know, Ric Flair wants to end it at WrestleMania. He doesn't want to do anything beyond that. He might be ready to hang it up and call it quits. And why not do it at WrestleMania? There's no bigger stage than WrestleMania. And I think the most appropriate place for Flair to end his career, if it's going to happen sometime this year, would be in front of a large crowd of 60-some-odd thousand people at WrestleMania, the same weekend that he goes into the Hall of Fame. It's really just a matter of timing. I don't argue with your logic here that Flair could have other entertaining feuds with people like Kennedy, with people like Randy Orton, especially if the storyline sticks that, you know, his next loss is the end of his career. There's something exciting about that. Anytime he steps in the ring, it could be all over for Ric Flair. You could definitely do a lot more. I was a proponent of one last title reign for Ric Flair. And on this podcast a couple of weeks ago, I went into detail about an idea that I had personally. And we all have our own little fantasy scenarios. But I went into detail about involving Flair and Money in the Bank, giving him the victory, him coming back at the end of the night after Orton shockingly retains his belt and beating Randy Orton to win the championship, to go off the air at WrestleMania holding the title, his 17th world title, high above his head. And in effect, swerving everybody who probably just assumed he was going to lose. And I thought that was a very exciting idea. A lot of you agreed with me. I said the chances of that happening are very, very slim. And now we know the likelihood of that happening is non-existent. Flair will not be involved in Money in the Bank. But it was just an idea. And if they're not going to go in that direction and they don't want to put Ric Flair in the championship, you know, scene, which I can understand, the man is pushing 60. Flair is not the same performer he was even just a couple of years ago. The fact is that it's time. Flair has deteriorated bit by bit in the ring. He's seemingly ready to hang it up. He's going into the Hall of Fame at the end of the month. It's WrestleMania. I can't think of a better performer to have a match with, to have a good match with, than Shawn Michaels. It's all about timing. The timing is right. Flair could wrestle another 5 years and still have entertaining feuds and cut entertaining promos, but the time is right. And that's why he will likely be going out, and he'll go out with a bang. Even though he'll lose, most likely, he will go out with a bang nonetheless and have a very emotional, very deserving, very respectful send-off at WrestleMania because it's quite simply the right time for it to happen. Got an email from Kyron in Las Vegas, Nevada. I hope I'm pronouncing the name right. He's a big fan of the site, big fan of the podcast, and has a question regarding ECW. Now, the first time that he heard Vince was going to revive the brand, his stomach sank to his knees. Yeah, you and everybody else. Due to the fact that it was not at all going to be similar to the ECW of yesteryear. So the question is, do I feel that ECW can be saved? In his view, perhaps bringing some of its natural gold back, like the old ECW tag team and television titles, or should they scrap the brand entirely and give SmackDown the remaining talent? Again, I sort of talked about this a little earlier on. I see there being no need for an ECW brand. And I actually don't have a problem with ECW now not being like the ECW of old. But if they had developed the brand into something really entertaining and exciting, you know, that would be cool. I'd have no problem with that. The brand is a waste. I mean, plain and simple, the brand is a waste. And SmackDown is always in need of some fresh talent because Raw always gets the bigger faces. You know, they kind of threw SmackDown a bone by giving them Big Show. Apparently Big Show is officially on the SmackDown brand, but he'll still appear on Raw, especially with the Mayweather angle. It's all about Raw and never about SmackDown. So by combining and by merging and consolidating some of that ECW talent like CM Punk, like Shelton Benjamin, like Elijah Burke, among others, into the SmackDown brand, you're only making SmackDown that much stronger. So yes, absolutely, I would be in favor of that entirely. As far as bringing back titles, I'll argue with you on that one until I turn blue in the face. I think the last thing this company needs is more titles. In fact, I would be in favor if they're insistent upon keeping the brand split with Raw and SmackDown. I would be in favor of having one world champion, one intercontinental champion as your secondary title, one set of tag team champions, because they barely have any tag teams anyway, and a women's title, because the women deserve their own representation. That's it. You don't need a U.S. title. You don't need two tag titles. You don't need a cruiserweight title, even though that title has seemingly been retired. And you certainly do not need to bring in more belts. That is not the answer. If anything, I think you need less. And his second question concerns John Cena. You know, in my view, do I think Cena is overrated? You know, he looks back at episode 16. I made the comment about Triple H being shoved down our throats as champion. So do I think that Cena is already halfway down our small intestine by now? You know, I'll do you one better. I think Cena is already down into my bowels, ready to be excreted. You know, I'm going to take a look in the toilet one day, and there's Cena going to be floating around the toilet bowl going down the pipes. Look, I said this before. John Cena is a good guy. He's a very good performer. He doesn't have to be the greatest in-ring wrestler. He's very entertaining for what he is, okay? The stuff earlier, he put his foot in his mouth. He said something really stupid that he shouldn't have said, as far as that goes. As far as Cena the performer, is he overrated? I don't think he is, because they don't make Cena out to be anything more than that. If they were calling Cena the best in-ring wrestler in the world, then I would say, oh, hell yes, Cena's overrated. They don't claim that Cena is the best in-ring performer. He is what he is. So in that respect, I don't think he's overrated. There's a difference, though, that you need to consider here between being overrated and being shoved down people's throats. Do I think we get too much of John Cena? Yes, I do. And certainly him being hurt, and I'm not an advocate for anybody getting hurt, but it did help the product because it made things fresher. It allowed Jeff Hardy to really morph into a bona fide main event player. I don't think that would have happened if Cena were still around. I don't think Jeff Hardy would have gotten the TV time that he did if John Cena were still around. And now that Cena's back, you can only hope that Hardy doesn't fall back, sink back to the mid-card. It seems like they're still trying to keep him strong, as you can tell from his performance in the Elimination Chamber last month at No Way Out. And we'll see what the future holds for him as far as, you know, Money in the Bank at WrestleMania. So I don't necessarily agree that Cena is overrated, but I think they should pull back the reins a little bit and not, you know, again, force him down people's throats the way that they have. You know, the You Can't Wrestle chants, for example, I think are old at this point. I don't think it is appropriate to chant You Can't Wrestle at Cena anymore because he's improved. You know, Cena is, you know, a fine wrestler for what he is. He'll never be at the level of a Bret Hart or a Kurt Angle or, dare I say, a Chris Benoit. That's not who John Cena is. You know, but he's definitely made improvements. And he, you know, look at it like this. If you look at some of the matches that Cena has been in, he has been in some pretty high caliber matches in his time on top in WWE. I remember the match he had with Umaga at the Royal Rumble last year. A very good street fight. It goes both ways. You know, Umaga's a very talented performer for a big guy, but you know what? John Cena hung in there with him. John Cena, in a way, is a ring general. He probably calls some of the action. He calls some of the spots in there. He's maturing before our very eyes. It's not an easy thing to go in there and pull off a 3- or 4-star match. Cena has had a bunch of them. And you can say, well, it's because he's been in there with great performers. You know, it's really easy to have a match like that when you're in there with Shawn Michaels for 50 minutes in the UK. It's really easy to have a match like that when you're in there with a guy like a Triple H. And that's certainly part of it. He's been in the ring with some pretty damn good performers. But it cuts both ways. I think the You Can't Wrestle chants are kind of old. You know, if people want to chant Cena sucks, they can shout Cena sucks to their heart's content. You know, I've done it myself. I think we should keep the You Can't Wrestle chants more reserved for people like Khali, quite frankly, where I think it's fully appropriate to chant stuff like that at guys like that. To chant that at Cena, you know, at one point I might have agreed with you, but lately I don't really think it's appropriate. But again, the one thing you have to say about John Cena's matches are people don't sit on their hands. I mean, they let their voices be heard. If they're cheering him, as most of the kids do, or if they're booing him pretty much as everybody else does, he's, you know, the atmosphere for his matches have a very big-time feel. And WrestleMania this year will not be any different. You know, you've got three guys in the ring, including John Cena. The crowd is going to be off the hook for that match, and that alone is going to help make the match that much better, because I would much rather watch a match where the crowd is going absolutely nuts as opposed to a match where you can hear crickets chirp, and that's something you'll never see in a John Cena match. So give him credit for that, at least, if nothing else. Another letter here from a longtime listener. No name, though. You guys got to include your names if you want me to say it on the air. He will be very upset, this listener will, if the Dragon is not inducted into the Hall of Fame this year. I touched on that a little bit earlier. I have not heard a peep about Ricky Steamboat going into the Hall of Fame, which is just baffling to me. This year would seem like a wholly appropriate year, especially with Ric Flair going in, unless they're saving the Dragon perhaps to induct Flair. And from what I've heard, Triple H will likely get that distinction. And not Steamboat. I haven't heard about him going into the Hall of Fame this year. That doesn't mean that they're not doing a good job of keeping that a secret and that he might go in. But, you know, he works for the company. He's a backstage agent. He's on good terms with them. And certainly he is deserving of going in. If he doesn't go in this year, don't jump off the Empire State Building just yet. I'm sure if he doesn't go in now, he will go in the next few years, probably a lot sooner. I mean, if he doesn't go in this year, I'd say he's got to be a prime candidate to go in next year. And the last letter I'll get to this week from David wants to know why, if WWE is having a Battle of the Brands match at WrestleMania between Raw and SmackDown, a match that will see Batista facing Umaga, why not involve ECW in the match? Well, because ECW is the redheaded stepchild of the company. They don't care about ECW. You may not even see an ECW title match at WrestleMania. Which just tells you all you need to know about that. Besides, you know, we already have a triple threat match in the main event. I am not a big fan of triple threat matches, especially the way WWE does them. I'm more of a fan of the way ECW used to do them as a three-way dance. They were elimination style. WWE doesn't do that. You know, one-on-one affairs are much better. Raw versus SmackDown. When you introduce ECW into the equation, it just makes things convoluted. And plus, who would you involve in that match? You know, Batista versus Umaga. That actually may turn out to be a hell of a stiff fight. Who else would you want to put in that match? Big Daddy V? I certainly wouldn't want to see that. And I want to give a quick plug to one of our listeners, Ricky, who wants everybody to know that for the first time in Puerto Rico, former WWE diva Dawn Marie will be at the Dream Team store of Plaza Carolina Mall on March 16th from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock. For more information, you can call 787-781-1706. Dawn Marie in Puerto Rico, coming up on March the 16th. All right, now the last thing I want to share with you real quick here on the podcast this week, I was doing some surfing the other day and came across a video. And I came across a video, now I had already seen some of these videos before, but not all of them. And I'm sure a lot of you listening have probably never even heard of this before. But back in 1993, there was something of a short-lived feud, an interpromotional feud, between the WWF and the USWA, which I believe at that time was jointly owned by Jerry Lawler and Jerry Jarrett. And basically, Jerry Lawler has been the king of Memphis for probably close to 30 years. You know, he has been the star performer in that territory, even to this very day. And so Lawler worked out some sort of deal with Vince McMahon, because Lawler was also working for WWF at the time. He was a sometimes performer, but mostly announcer on their shows. And they worked out an agreement where Vince McMahon would actually show up in Memphis and would send WWF performers into the territory to fight Jerry Lawler. So basically, all of the WWF guys would be heels coming in to try to knock Jerry Lawler, the big local hometown babyface, off his perch. And so you see these videos, and you see a time when Vince McMahon was way ahead of his time. I mean, this was the genesis of the Mr. McMahon character when you watch Vince back in the Memphis territory in 93. When you watch guys like Bret Hart, who was the company's big bona fide babyface, coming into Memphis playing the role of heel with his baby brother Owen. When you see Tatanka, who at the time was the babyface, undefeated Native American superstar, coming into Memphis as a heel long before he won heel in WWF. It's just absolutely fascinating to watch this. So any of you that want to check out the various videos, they're on YouTube. All you got to do is search McMemphis. One word, McMemphis, McMemphis. You will get the chapters of the WWF-USWA rivalry. And some of this stuff, including the Vince McMahon stuff and the promos that he cut a full 5 or 6 years before Mr. McMahon was born. It is absolutely fascinating to watch. And a quick note for those of you here in the States, AWA Wrestling is now airing late nights on ESPN Classic, replacing the old Herb Abrams UWF footage. Now, Herb Abrams UWF is not to be confused with the old Bill Watts UWF. Herb Abrams' version of it was founded in 1990, and it bears no relation whatsoever to Bill Watts' old product. Of course, Bill Watts was the father of Mid-South Wrestling, which actually started in 1979. And then I believe it was around 86, Watts decided to go national with his product and renamed it UWF. Unfortunately, it failed miserably. And the following year, he sold it off to Crockett Promotions. But AWA, Vern Gagne's product, now airing late nights on ESPN Classic at 1 a.m. Eastern here in the States. Check it out. I saw the first episode they aired, a young Shawn Michaels, a young cowboy Scott Hall, who looked an awful lot like an old 70s porn star with his mustache. Really, really, really creepy. So if you want to check that out, there you have it here in the States, ESPN Classic late nights during the week for your old AWA fix. Whew, that was a lot. That was a lot of stuff to cover this week, but I love it, and I want to hear from you guys as well. TheSolomonster@gmail.com is the email address. TheSolomonster@gmail.com. This was a very, very newsworthy week, and hopefully, you know what? Hopefully we have another one coming up. This is the longest podcast we've ever done here. I want to go even longer next week. I want to hear from you guys. I want more feedback, and that's going to do it for this week, so until next time, be well, stay safe. And one last parting message for John Cena. Keep your mouth shut and mind your own business. Okay? Later.
You've been listening to The Solomon Monster.
You know, I really just don't understand what they're doing. Anybody agree with me out there? I mean, anybody. Come on, throw me a bone here.
Probably the single dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
God, I love this business.
On SE Scoops.